The new year is the perfect moment to set your family up for success, including finding a school that finally fits the way your child learns. Introducing K-12 Powered Schools, tuition-free, accredited online public schools for grades K through 12. With K-12, students move at their own pace, with state-certified teachers who bring lessons to life through interactive, hands-on technology. If your child needs a school that adapts to them, K-12 can help unlock their full potential. Learn more at k12.com/podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week, and we review them with our hearts and minds. So
I'm heart today, guys. You guys be minds.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Pete, are you going to be the body? Pete the body LePage?
Pete the body LePage. This book is beefy.
Well, I think it is. It is pretty beefy because we're going to be talking about Absolute Batman, number 16 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Nick Dragotta. This is the second part of a two-part crossover with Absolute Wonder Woman. You don't have to have read Absolute Wonder Woman to understand this, but it certainly helps. There's a little bit of setup there as Batman calls on Wonder Woman to help him get his friend Killer Croc, Waylon, back to normal if she can. So they go on a mythological adventure together. Pete, you're pretty hyped for the beef. Where's the beef?
Yeah, dude, this is just great. First off, badass cover alert. I mean, the size of her sword is hilarious and awesome. Yeah, this is just great. Sets up for such a great comic on the inside here. And I loved all the Wonder Woman, Batman stuff. They make such a great team in this. And I liked, you know, Batman trying to help the villain in this. You know, some really touching moments. The only problem I had, and it's a very small problem because I love this comic. I think it's amazing. You should check it out. Is they introduced the craziest joke I've ever seen in my life in the last issue. And I want to be here and enjoy this, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, where's that fucking crazy Joker, man? What's he doing? So hard to enjoy this with that going on, but this is really just so peak beef. It's glorious.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things that jumped out from this issue. Like, the last issue was the big fight against Bane, which I think like, it's crazy that we are seeing Bane, like, their fight knocked over buildings. And I was like, oh, yeah, but it's, like, sort of a metaphorical thing. This issue literally starts with them being like, we got to clean up this mess from this giant Bane that fell down here. And it's like, oh, no, they're being very literal about we need to put bricks here because he knocked down an entire building with his body, a normal-sized
body.
Well, also,
I'll throw out there, there's a very Batman thing that Scott Snyder puts in here, which is the stadium and buildings that they destroyed were things that the city should have demolished years ago and never did. So something that we've been getting with this Batman is like, yes, he's beefy. Yes, he's huge. Yes, he has a very different focus from the Batman we know in the main universe. But he's still always planning and always thinking ahead. And that's something that sort of is like on the back burner, but it's on the back burner all of the time.
Well, and I think they pay it off a second time in this issue with this great moment that Bruce has with his dad in
the liminal space that
Wonder Woman takes him to. And it is about like planning and what being a parent and steward of a place is. And it was really cool. Like, Scott Snyder's just being so deliberate with this in every moment. In what the big fights from last issue to this, where he's creating the rogues in such a surprising way, where it's like these characters that were close to Bruce and now they're going to become his enemies, and that makes them even more dangerous and deadly to Bruce and more emotionally resonant.
Yeah, heartbreaking
because Bruce is also trying so hard. This guy created this, but it was like when he was like spending one of his times contacting Wonder Woman on getting Killer Croc a necklace. I was like, Bruce, you only get a couple Wonder Woman calls, bro.
Yeah, bro.
Wait. But that's what he's doing because he cares so much about them. It's going to make it even more devastating when this weird brontosaurus looking croc tries to bite his neck off.
And we've been reading comic books for a while, I think, and we've certainly seen a lot of crossovers happen. So it is very unique and special that these feel so different, these two issues. And a lot of that is because of the thing we've been talking about all along with the Absolute Universe, is the specificity of everything that they're doing here. Kelly Thompson and Hayden Sherman over in Absolute Wonder Woman have a crazy specific take on that world and that feel. Scott Snyder and Nick Jurgoda have a crazy specific take on the look and feel of Gotham over in Absolute Batman. And so seeing these creative units play with the other character makes it more fun. Like, there's nothing against anybody, but there's nothing fun about, like, whoa, Spider-Man swung by and saw the Fantastic Four again. Cool. You know, or even in the main universe, like, to talk about DC being like, Superman's in this issue of Batman. I'm like, all right, they're friends. That's fine.
Well, and like, even like reading, we're going to talk about some other DC comics, but the crossover nature of every book is so insane at this point. Like, there's characters from the present continuity, from side continuities who are living and dying, for all there's alternate versions from the, you know, dark side, Omega infested part of the universe. It's like, yo, it's so intense. And to read a crossover that's so cleanly done, like you're saying, is so refreshing.
Yep. Just before we move on, I just want to quickly say that, like, the Absolute comics are great, but Absolute Batman and what Scott Snyder is doing, I'm so hyped for each issue, and I'm, like, so in this kind of take on Batman. He's having so much fun, but taking such big swings that still feels like it fits everything. It's really impressive, the writing that he's doing with this, and I have just been... Every issue, I was just the excitement of, like, oh man, what's going to happen? Or, oh, what's, you know, it's just really such a cool thing that we don't always get all the time with comics. So it's just great when it's really hitting. And he is really hitting with this.
Yeah. Next up, Iron Man, number one from Marvel, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Carmen Canero. You can probably figure this out from the name of the writer, but it is Joshua Williamson jumping from DC over to Marvel to do a brand new take on Iron Man, or rather, I would say, an old take on Iron Man, because it is very much the MCU-inflected Iron Man that I don't think we've really gotten in Marvel Comics for a little while here. He's big, he's bold, he's doing crazy stunts and things, and Madam Mask and AIM are coming right for him. And I would say, just to be clear, I think this team crushed it. This is the most fun I've had reading an Iron Man comic in a really long time.
Oh, wow.
I agree with you. Like, I also really enjoyed this. It's a very smart idea to lay out the premise that this is a spoiler for what happens in the issue, but AIM is trying to create their own Tony Stark, not Iron Man. They need to make a Tony Stark to be their, like, new charming, confident leader who's great at engineering and also evil, I guess they're going to do. And I think that's a really good idea. They're taking advantage of Tony Stark's contacts, and they're just like, it felt like a little bit of like stealing IP, AI inflected idea. And I love AIM as the villains here. This feels like the kind of thing, they're often treated as like goobers in dumb clothes, but they should be a type of villain that is being meticulous and thoughtful, and that's their power. And we never really see that. So that was cool here. The only character that I'm like, I'm so overexposed to is Madam Mask.
Yeah, right.
She's everywhere.
It's crazy.
It's crazy how much we're seeing her. And I get here it makes sense because she and Tony used to date. So it's maybe a thing there. But like, I'm like, she's been just too many. They even say in here, like, yeah, you're done with your gang war in Spider-Man. I was like, right. Why is the same person doing that and this? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, she is a great villain for this, though. I do think this is fun and cool setup. You know, the kind of right from the start, you're like, oh, shit, I see what they're doing. So, like, really clear, well-executed idea at the start of this that kind of just sets up really well for, like, hey, you want to see how this kind of unfolds? Keep reading. So, real clear statement, and yeah, I think really solid execution. So I'm excited to see what happens here.
And Tony is charming and heartfelt in here in a way that I feel like he hasn't been in a long time. So yep. I like that.
Next up, Spirit of the Shadows, number one from OD Press, written by Daniel Ziegler and Nick Cagnetti, art
the
by
Ziegs?
Nick Cagnetti, the Ziegs and the Cags together again. And this is, I mentioned this on the live show, but this feels like a very Kirby-inflected type comic book. You've got this very weird, ghostly character who is stuck in the afterlife and trying to get home. Meanwhile, we're following the mystery of his death back on Earth, and the two collide by the end in, I would say, an interesting way. It definitely looks unlike anything on the stands, and it feels like it too. I had a blast reading this issue. It is just packed first page to last with ideas.
Yeah, I agree. It's really bright and beautiful and creative and loud in such a great, cool way. And, yeah, I think kids are going to start picking up violins after this. Like, this character is really cool and is going to start
a movement.
Do you
think this was paid for by Big Violin?
Ooh, Big Violin.
Yeah. Cello.
Stradivarius is here amongst us, coming for us. Big no, Strad.
This is awesome. It's very creative, really fun, unique looking, bright, jumps off the page. So I'm excited for more of this.
It's clearly the violin, though, from Starship Troopers, which is one of the funniest scenes in an action movie of all time, where all the soldiers on a bug planet where they're getting killed, someone breaks out their fun pack, and inside is a football and a plastic violin, and they just fucking jam. And that's good movie making right there. But on for this comic, I also enjoyed this. This reminded me a lot. Yes, very Kirby-esque. But it reminded me a lot of a comic we're going to talk about in a little bit, Absolute Martian Manhunter.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a fan of that and want to see something a little further out there, I think, this is a comic for you.
DCKO, the kids are all fight. Number one from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Travis Mercer. While the Titans are trying to coordinate the escape efforts from Earth and everybody else is in the Omega tournament, it's left to John Kent to take care of the kids on the Watchtower. Boy. But oopsie doodle, they They sneak out to try to take down Granny Goodness, leading to a surprising debut. And I should have mentioned this before, but spoiler warning for anything we're talking about here in the stack. I thought this was a lot of fun. I had a blast with this. It really makes me, I don't know, I just keep thinking about how every single one of these spinoffs and one-shots and everything, they're very methodical in terms of, hey, we're going to tell a different story here that you can enjoy on its own. And that's the same thing with this issue. It's just a fun time. Everybody's having fun with this event.
Yeah, in a lot of different ways. This feels totally different. The art is really clean and fresh, I thought. I really like this picks up on characters from the Stargirl, the Lost Children, I believe was the name of the series, the miniseries. I like these characters. They're distinct, very distinctly written, have their own thing. The character, I don't know if you spoiled, that is brought back here, I thought was great to see. And this event just continues to surprise with all the different areas that they're exploring.
Yeah, this is great. This is cool, bright, and fun. Yeah, you get it, you understand, like the classic, like, whatever you do, don't do this thing that's going to happen. So just great setup, fun delivery. Yeah, you're worried for these kids. You're worried about what's going to go down. So great stakes, great art. This is a blast.
Great stakes.
Great stakes, great art. Next up, wow, we love everything. The Amazing Spider-Man Annual, number one from Marvel.
Well, by maybe.
I guess we'll see. Written by Saladin Ahmed and Joe Kelly, art by Federico Vincentini and Roy Mercado. In the front story, Spidey is teaming up with Rapid, new character who doesn't exactly have speed powers, but I believe can speed up the world around him, so he appears to go faster. And
I actually think, Alex, he's slowing down the world.
He stops
dying. And then he gets to go faster.
Oh, and he gets to go faster.
But, okay. He's going normal speed. It's just he creates a bubble where things are slowing down. So if you happen to be in the bubble, he, in fact, is moving rapidly.
Do you know what my main thought? We should talk. There's a backup story as well by Joe Kelly that's setting up a lot of the stuff that's going on with the villains in Amazing Spider-Man. This is nothing against the story, and I've actually liked a bunch of these Rapid stories, but it really struck me when I was reading this. I was like, man, they already used up all the good powers, didn't they?
Like, well, and not necessarily, but I'm also like, give us someone with like electric powers. just tell it, have it be an interesting person. Because I actually like the idea. This story goes through pains to be like, this guy, Rapid, he's a regular guy with a job. And he's so tired that he's having headaches that he thinks is disrupting his ability to slow time in a bubble so that the people inside the bubble look at him and think he's going rapidly because he's renamed Rapid. But I was like, everything else is so, like, stilted. And Saladin Ahmeda is a writer that I feel like debuted really strong in comics and then has, like, had some misfires. I think the Daredevil series is one that was a struggle, at least for me. And I think the issue, this issue showed me is, it's maybe just the dialogue. I think the dialogue is a struggle here. While the ideas at play are interesting. Because I like the villain in this issue, I thought was cool too. But it's just it's the dialogue is written in a way that I'm like, this feels a little cookie cutter or something.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, yeah, there's some fun stuff in here, but then just the kind of like dad lecture that happens where it's like, hey, you know, you gotta get to good 8 hours of sleep. You gotta
let me say though,
eating.
This is the lesson that people say to me, like, you're not drinking enough water. And I'm like, you're right, I'm not. And that way, I'm the Rapid. You
know? Here's the thing that didn't quite scan for me. Not to lump on this too much, because I think it's fine. Like, it's a fine story.
Yeah, the art's great.
I agree with you. I like the realism of, oh, yeah, you should drink more water and get more rest as a superhero, and it's tough to balance all this stuff. But at the same time, you have Spider-Man being like, well, this is my 500th appearance in a comic book this week, and I have plenty of time to hang out with literally everybody, except I can't make my date with whoever I'm dating right now. I literally can't remember. Space lady. Yeah. So, I don't know. There's like...
Space lady.
I would be interested
space
to
lady,
read...
Space
there,
lady!
There was... God, I'm forgetting... There was a comic book about a guy who discovered he had fire powers that was an Image
Human
comic
Torch.
Book. No.
Firestorm.
That came out from Image Comics probably about a year ago, I want to say.
Is that the fireman who had
maybe
sort of anti-fire powers?
Yeah, it was anti-fire powers. Like, he had the powers, yes. But he was like, I'm just trying to live here with my family. Please leave me alone. And that sort of take, like treating it as a realistic drama, is interesting. It just doesn't work when you're hanging out with Spider-Man and fighting a social media supervillain. I don't know. The ideas don't quite jive. That's all.
Yeah.
Anyway, lumped on this enough, I guess. That was pretty malevolent, like our next book, Malevolent number one from Image Comics, written by Justin Jordan, art by John Bivens. This takes place in a world where demons are real and they've taken over parts of Earth. Enter a lady who is part demon and gonna
Lady Demon.
Pete, I gotta imagine you love this book.
What? Oh man. Yeah, I did. I really love this. That was really fun. The kind of half demon lady was cool, and it had kind of like a Suicide Squad kind of situation, but yeah, great art, trippy stuff, but fun, enjoyable. I'm looking forward to more, you know?
Yeah, it's very like the Space Marines and Aliens. We get like a little bit of exposition at the top. I thought it was well laid out, but it's a bit wordy. And then we get into some good, actually a great procedural scene that I thought was right out of any sort of action sequence where they're like, what's this blood on me suddenly? And I thought that was really well done. And I like it feels like the nature of this book is a nice premise now that once you're in it.
Absolute Wonder Woman number 16 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman. In this issue, Absolute Zatanna is back, and she is gunning directly for Wonder Woman with the Absolute version of the Suicide Squad, and they maybe pull the rug out from under her. Pete, you seem pretty psyched. Take it away.
Yeah, this is just continues to be another banger-ish. Kelly Thompson is killing the game. Zatanna Suicide Squad, just awesome. Wonder Woman missing her mom was very touching and nice. Yeah, I'm having an absolute blast with this. We got Absolute Wonder Woman twice this week. Thank you very much. Yes, please.
I also really enjoyed this. This book is perfect. It's just perfect. Mm-hmm. The way that the story is constantly telling our present-day story while also mythologizing, getting mythological with Wonder Woman is really nice and makes for a story that's always being reflexive on itself. I like the danger that Wonder Woman is in. It feels the narration is so specific with like, my magic's been taken, but my arm is still working. Something different's happening. And then you feel, it feels like you're taking the bait of for the trap alongside mm-hmm. Wonder Woman, and then the trap is sprung. And it's just well done, so well done. The Hayden Sherman art is...
Yeah, the art's phenomenal.
A couple of little things to shout out about this one. Love the opening scene with Steve Trevor talking about Diana yes. in front of the Congress, I assume, or whatever yep. it was, the congressional hearing. I thought that was really well done and a really good just mission statement for this version of Wonder Woman. There's also little acting bits that are put in there. Like, clearly Barbara Minerva is in love with Wonder Woman. And just that little moment where she grabs Barbara's hand and Barbara gets a little flustered, I thought was really nice as well. And I think overall, I don't know, this is something that I've been mulling over anyway, but Wonder Woman is, best is the wrong word, but she's definitely like the most engaging character in the Absolute Universe, I think. Like, she's the one that you feel for. You feel your heart leaping out of your chest for, and that's part of Hayden Sherman's design. I mean, we're looking at this cover right now, and she has these enormous eyes and is just, as a character, drawn very inviting. But it's very different from Bruce, who is always wearing a hat over his eyes and is always hunched over and is remote for the viewer. Or Superman, even, who is always like, oh, I'm so conflicted about everything. Diana is the one who, she's open, she's walking tall, and it leads with her heart first. It's just such a different feel from absolutely anything else. Just a wonderful book.
Also, just wanted to say, excited for the Vertigo teaser we get on the cover here. So hopefully the Vertigo stuff from DC will be great again.
Well, we'll find out next week. It starts
next
week.
Wish I didn't say it like that.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I almost called you out, but didn't.
That was just awful.
The new year is the perfect moment to set your family up for success, including finding a school that finally fits the way your child learns. Introducing K-12 Powered Schools, tuition-free, accredited online public schools for grades K through 12. With K-12, students move at their own pace, with state-certified teachers who bring lessons to life through interactive, hands-on technology. If your child needs a school that adapts to them, K-12 can help unlock their full potential. Learn more at k12.com/podcast.
The Punisher, Red Band, number 5 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Julius Oda. This is the final issue of this Red Band series, but don't worry, it'll be back in a regular band series starting, I believe, next month from the same exact team, or at least still from Benjamin Percy. Here, Punisher is so chatty. Like, just shut up, Frank. Stop talking. He's like, hey, and he's like talking about his feelings and everything.
No, stop.
No, I think it's crazy. Instead of shooting his guns, he just shouts bang, bang, bang at
people. Who's it worse? Bugs Bunny.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Anyway, Tombstone is trying to take him down, and he is trying to take Kingpin down, leading to a number of climactic confrontations by the end of this issue. Pete, you've been a little conflicted about Punisher lately.
Yes.
How you feel
medium
about
hate
this
book.
How you feel? How you feel?
Well, I felt like the ending was a little on the nose, where it was like, you know, Punisher, Red Band, and then he's like, oh, man, Punisher just sees red. And I was like, I get it, guys.
Jump out to me, too, yeah. And I also didn't like the fact that then he jumped on stage at his club and started jamming out. And I was like,
yeah, the air guitar was too much. Give him a real guitar. It's very funny to be like, this Punisher story was on the nose where he just shoots everyone. It's like, that's everyone.
No, I didn't mean that part. That part's normal. But yeah, you know, he's rocking the old suit with the white boots and the gloves, which isn't my favorite, but it's fun here. And
do you think he got the idea for white boots from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis? Pete, you were bringing up politics a minute ago. So
I sure was. I usually am. This is a lot goes down this issue, so a lot of great stuff happens, a lot of badass moments. But the writing got a little too cutesy at the end. But other than that, I was having a blast.
The Punisher wrecks Kingpin so bad that I'm like, bro, this guy's dead. Yeah. How? Kingpin gets shot like 40 times.
Yeah, like it was. he unloaded. So,
this isn't out of continuity.
This is in continuity, and he is going to survive. It's crazy. I don't know. This is the problem. We've talked about this a billion times on the show, but this is my problem inherently with the Punisher in the mainline Marvel universe. Is like, it is a crazy moment when Kingpin goes through this whole speech of doing the, like, no, put down your guns. It's going to be me and you, Mano versus, and he shoots him mid-sentence.
I thought that was good. I liked that. That was great.
And I was like, wow, they killed the Kingpin. That's kind of, I can't believe they actually did that. That's crazy. Yeah. And then you have the last page where you have all the doctors around him and the letters page. The editor's like, oh boy, sure looks like Kingpin's dead, huh? And I was like, okay, so sure, he's not dead. That's fine. And I don't believe that they're necessarily going to kill him in the main universe, but like, that's the thing, is that Punisher should be killing the Kingpin. He absolutely should be shooting him 40 times to death.
He did,
but that can't happen because he's in the Marvel universe, and that's why it just does not quite work.
Yeah, if he just killed a lesser pin, a smaller pin, I think that and that would be fine.
Yeah,
like he does in so many other stories.
A bishop pin, if you will, or
yeah, exactly. Yeah, a little prince pin or something. But they really use the red band nature of this. There's a dude who gets smushed by a car. A dude gets his face shot off from a distance.
Yeah,
really cool. Doing that, and then saving Microchip at the end. What a time! It only takes. I guess the real thing is just cry.
Yeah. He shoves his gun in Microchip's mouth. Pete, have you ever done that with any of your friends or?
Not that I want to talk about.
What about coworkers? Not that I want to talk about. Terrifying.
Coworkers,
because Microchip's a coworker at the end of the day.
Yeah,
a peer.
That's true. Pete, you're in HR. Is that an HR technique when you're talking to somebody?
Oh, definitely. It goes over really well. It doesn't lead to any problems.
Cool. Well, here's another thing that definitely won't lead to any problems. Bug Wars, the Spider-Witch special number one from Image Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Mahmoud Azrar, Baltimore Rivas, and David Messina. This one shot takes place between the first, I guess we can call them season or book or whatever you want, of Bug Wars and the second one, following this Spider-Witch as she is sent off on a solo mission for reasons that become apparent over the course of the issue. Justin, you're a huge fan of this book. What'd you think about this one shot?
I think it's excellent. I love this world, and this is a deep dive into an aspect of the world that we only sort of glanced against in the first series. And it's great. I love this character. This issue features multiple stories, which I was surprised about. I liked all of them. I love the emotionality that we're getting into with this character. I'm going to, next time I'm at the comic book store, I'm going to buy the secret blind naked bag, which I think is what,
that's not the official name.
Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, we mentioned this on the live show, but there, and this is not a joke, there is a polybagged spider sex variant of this book.
And is it just the cover?
I think so. What do you mean?
Or is it like the, like a the
oh, like there's more different. Spider sex?
Well, that's what I'm like. I'm more curious.
Pages of Spider
Sex. I'm more curious than anything because it's not like this issue is specifically very sexual. Like it's violent.
There's a whole scene where somebody, I believe they use the word fuck and then eat a guy.
Yes, I mean, she was forced to do the usual ritual where she had to fuck and then eat him. I was like, sick move. But is that ritual?
I'm gonna see if my wife wants to do that.
Oh my God.
That's praying mantis style.
Yes. But I believe, to answer your question, I believe it's just the cover. There are not extra pages of spider sex there.
Well, I'll let you know when I get to
that. Now, your love of spider sex, you also like Black Cat. Does that come from when Black Cat had sex with Spider-Man on a roof? Because that's spider sex.
You know, I've never really thought of it, Alex, but hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Put that in a blind bag, Marvel.
Got multiple legs, you can fertilize these eggs.
I keep buying these blind bag porno comics. I'm gonna go blind. You know what I mean?
Yes, this is great. The world building here is fantastic. If you've never picked up Bug Wars before, you don't have to have read the previous series, though you definitely should. You can just pick it up here and jump right in. Beautiful art, really well done. For adults only, yes.
Are you worried about having that around the house? You know, you got some kids now, Justin. You can't just be having porn.
They
got
to learn about spider sex sometime.
Yeah. Don't worry. I have a special tree stump that I hide my pornographic comics under. No one's ever going
to keeping
find
it upstate. I love it. yeah. All the nudity jokes aside, this is very badass. You get a lot of bang for your buck as far as, like, there's 50-plus pages of action in this. And, yeah, just really cool story. I really love the time we spent with these characters in this. And, yeah, this is really worth checking out. If you like the Bug Wars, definitely check out this issue.
Next up, Superman number 34 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Eddie Barrows and Eber Ferreira. This is tying into the DC KO event. While Superman and Lex Luthor are in the Final Four, Lois Lane and Superboy Prime and a Superman robot are trying to get important information to the Time Trapper that can break this whole thing wide open. What do you guys think about this tie-in? We've been pretty positive about tie-ins so far.
Yeah, this was really fun, badass last panel that really kind of gets things hyped. And yeah, I think this is just really good stuff. I love the pace, love the action. Yeah, I thought this was a great issue and worth checking out.
The way that they're able in this DC KO crossover to just parcel out the pockets of story they're telling in each of these comics is amazing. This focusing on the Omega Evil Legion characters that I love. I think they're such a great invention. I hope they continue on past this event because they're great. Well, also, we get a lot of, Superwoman flying around. Superboy Prime really taking center stage in this comic, which I think is such a fun flip and does feel like what you'd expect to happen when you get a Omega energy infecting the DC universe. Yeah, of course, Superboy Prime gets to be the main character in a Superman story. The art is appropriately dark, tinged with darkness. I think this is great.
I agree. Great stuff going on here. The only thing that was a little frustrating to me is they're trying to get this information, and they've been talking about, like, we got to help Superman somehow. We see this is taking place as Superman, Wonder Woman, Lex Luthor, and Joker are now back on Earth. And they're flying over Earth, and I was like, just go over there. Superman is over there. You could talk to him right now and tell him what's going on. But
they're
right.
Busy, Alex. Well, I don't show up at your job and try to talk to you about
it. I wish you would.
Okay. Yeah.
I wish you would.
Bring him some porn
covers. Pete keeps coming over to my job and sticking a gun in my mouth, and I don't like that.
That's part of the podcast, though. Just a minute. Okay,
all right. The Infernal Hulk, number 3 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Nick Klein and Kev Walker. While the Infernal Hulk is running hog wild on the Earth, this issue we cut over to Bruce Banner and Betty and find out what's been going on with them, how they survived, how they are surviving or not, so to speak. No. Fantastic issue, beautiful art, love Kev Walker's art. I loved more than anything how Kev Walker's art and Nick Klein's art integrated with each other throughout the issue. I thought artistically it was just fascinating to see how they put it all together. What did you guys think?
Yeah, this is unbelievable. The cover is sick, man. Really cool cover. Yeah, we kind of get a little bit of what's going on, and it's insane. The fact that, you know, they're separate now, and the Hulk and his monsters are wreaking havoc, and the Avengers are like, yo, bro, we need you. And he's like, nah, dude, I'm with my lady. I don't do any of that anymore. Crazy stuff. So I can't wait to see what's going to happen and what goes down in the next issue. But yeah, this continues to be really impressive stuff. Taking a lot of big swings with this character, pushing and pulling in different ways. This is continues to be really fun.
Yeah, I agree. Like this really nice sort of step away issue where we get to see Betty and Bruce living their sort of sham of a comfortable life. And all the other heroes show up, and they're pretty shitty to Bruce, I thought. And I like the way he comes back and says, I've done so much for the world. I deserve a little cowardice, which I thought was like not a way I would think someone would put it as a hero, and I thought that was cool. And there's just so much dread over this comic in a great way.
I do think, though, that like if you were on a team with somebody and they were just like, yo, man, I know that like the dude that I was a part of is wreaking havoc, but like, I'm not going to help you guys. I think you could be a little shitty to him. You know what I mean?
Iron Man is a little over the top of this issue. Like, he's rude.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll say
cool, but rude or just rude?
Just rude.
Okay. Just
yeah, but like a little bit. All right. You're right. He's a little cool. Void Rivals, number 26 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Andre Bresson. I can't believe you're pumping your fist at this one, Pete, because we're part of the Quintesson War, and this issue, things Pete has seen before show up in this book, so he loved it. Take it away, Pete.
Yeah, come on, the Sharkticon showed up, so, you know, I mean, this is just prime. If you love the Transformers, the animated movie, which who doesn't? This is just all the fun stuff come to life. We get kind of robots battling in space, punching each other, trying to
Sharkticons have come to life.
Figure out what's up, and I'm having a blast with this.
This is actually less lively than the Transformers the movie, I gotta say, because that was animated and this is not.
Technical.
In the way that Pete reads it, it jumps off the page.
That's right.
The thing is, I think I've discovered how I can read this, is just to really step back. I feel like I look for answers in Void Rivals. I want to know why things are happening and what they mean. But maybe the way to do this is to just lean back and let it wash over you a little bit.
Yeah,
because there's some cool stuff. There's cool images. But when the skull face just shows up, I'm like, I don't know what this means, but if I'm just letting it wash over me, if I look through the world through Pete tinged lenses, I think I can come to enjoy this Void Rivalry.
Yeah, talk to the Handroid, bro.
All right, we'll see what happens.
Alex, what did you think about this?
Great question. Not enough Skuckzoid.
Yeah, you hate it when there's no Skuckzoid.
Canned answer from Alex Galvin.
It's the part of the book that I could really hook into because I also miss my wife and kids when I'm doing this podcast, so I relate to it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Really, do you? Yes. You know, if you want to take a minute and just send them a message.
No, it's okay. They know.
If you want to go upstairs, give them a quick hug and kiss and come back
down.
That's
right. I tell them, Daddy's at sea. He won't be returning until the voyage is over.
Yeah, Daddy's off fighting his war downstairs on his podcast.
Absolute Flash, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Nick Robles. Wally is lost inside the Still Force. Is it the Still Force? Is that what they're calling it? What are they calling it? Still Zone? Pizza Zone?
Still Force.
Auto Zone. He's lost in the Auto Zone.
Ugh, been there. What is any of this for? I don't understand cars.
Meanwhile, Eobard Thawne, who is now a monstrous Speed Force type monster, has escaped and is attacking the Fort Fox lab while the rogues try to hold him back and fix things. So lots of mythology stuff going down in this issue. The thing that I thought most fascinating, they don't explicitly say this, but they talk about how there is a well of dark, evil, red energy at the center of the universe. And I think as readers are supposed to be like, oh, that's this version of the Speed Force, but that's Darkseid, right?
Yeah,
like that's
the Omega energy.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. Interesting stuff.
But I think the Speed Force is more evil here.
I don't think it's the Speed Force. Like, I think that's the thing, is that it's actually, it's Darkseid, and that's what the speedsters are getting their energy from. That's what it's sucking out. So, I don't know. I don't know where we're going, but it's definitely, like, this has slowly grown into, I think, a cornerstone book for the mythology of the Absolute Universe, but I guess we'll see.
I agree with that, and I really like this book. And reading this issue, I think what it does really smartly is The issue with the Flashes in the main universe is they all are sort of occupying the same hole. They're all fast and they're all like smart and they're all like doing a good job. And in this comic, everyone's different. They're in a different spot. There are people who have died in different ways. There are people who are missing in certain ways. And they have a very distinct place in the universe. And that's just inherently more interesting because this was a story built, you know, on its own. So I really like that. I think this book has really built well and has been very meticulous in its construction, and that's really cool.
Also, the art is phenomenal. The Flash pages hold for laughter. are just absolutely just phenomenal, just great. You know, some real cool spreads there, and just it's impressive artistically what's happening.
Yeah, when you walk into a buffet, do you say that as well? Some real cool spreads here.
Cool spreads, guys.
Start.
Sorcerer Supreme, number two from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando, art by Bernard Chang. Wanda Maximoff thinks she's supposed to be the Sorcerer Supreme, but the Vashanti disagree and have made Agatha Harkness the Sorcerer Supreme instead. And boy, are they fighting about it over the course of this issue. I know you guys were pretty hyped for the first issue. How do you feel about issue number two?
Still hype. I mean, this is like the whole issue is a giant fight, so that's a blast. A little
fight.
Wong action is sprinkled in there. This is just a ton of fun. This continues to build really nicely. I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen next. This is a great team on this. This is a tight package.
I have a question. What's the deal with Agatha Harkness in this universe? Because for a long time, she was an old woman who was like a ghost slash witch who was a babysitter for the Fantastic Four. Is this the same Agatha?
It's the same Agatha. I don't remember when it was, though.
It was Agatha all along.
But I think I can point to after WandaVision, but before Agatha all along, they cast a spell that turned her into a hot younger woman. So, yeah.
But she was nice. Catherine she was a Han. Good witch for a long time, and now she's an evil, so mostly evil witch.
Right. And I would point to that probably happened sometime between WandaVision and Agatha.
I got you. I wish this character was reconciling that, because I do think that could be an interesting story point.
You think it would be better if she was older, is what you're saying?
No, that's a you thing. What I'm saying is that the idea that maybe she was secretly sucking out the life force of superheroes or something that whole time she was in disguise as an older woman, or she was controlling her hunger and that's why she was aging. And now she's back. Like I want to, maybe that's me being continuity obsessed, but I just want a little bit of that when we're this, cause this book is doing so much of like deep, deep Marvel work, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I don't blame it, cause I actually like this story and I think it's a great fight and really like adept at using different versions of magic here. It's just that's what jumped into my head with the strange continuity of.
No, I agree. MCU she was a very different character, and now she is evil Scarlet Witch, and that's pretty much all that's going on with her. But as usual, Steve Orlando does a good job of writing that, and Bernard Chang does some very solid superhero art. Feral number 20 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Trish Forstner, Antonio Rodriguez. The headline here is that on the top it says, after this issue, everything changes. And it sure does. Some big stuff goes down by the end of this issue as we wrap up the Pet City arc that has found our cats fighting for their survival inside a massive pet store. Justin, you were pretty excited about this one on the live show.
Yeah, JT says.
I really enjoy this book every time. Like, everything does change here, like the time in a zombie movie or TV show when they feel like they're at a safe haven. It eventually turns evil, and then something happens where everything gets fucked up and everyone has to leave. We get that here, but there's a mystical element at play at points here. The action, despite the fact that all the characters are cute, it's horrifying all the time. And that's a great trick to pull off month in and month out.
You got to be Tony Fleece and killing me over here. Yeah, I'm just so happy that.
Do you want to take that again? Or
Nope. Yeah. No.
Okay. You actually sound like you're getting Tony Fleece and killed.
Yeah, that's, Tony Fleece is Fleece and killing me.
Tony
Fleece is killing me.
I'm just so happy they're out of Pet City.
Use that for your back cover, Tony Fleece.
Yeah, I dare you.
I was just so happy they're out of Pet City. That place was awful and horrible. And
it's almost like the Pet City is like an AutoZone for pets. You guys ever? Don't you think?
Do they have like a car wash, but for cats, where like they're on a conveyor belt and they get like little brushes and stuff?
Why can't we just combine AutoZone and Pet City?
Right?
Like, let's put it together. Who cares? It's great. One stop.
Doesn't Miyazaki? He invented that cat bus thing that people could ride in. Like, why isn't that more prevalent? Why isn't that more places?
Yeah, Pete, you love cats and cars. Don't you want them to be the same?
No,
don't you want to have
a
little... Pete, what would you rather have? A fluffy car that shits in a box in your house? Or a giant cat that you ride around inside?
I'm going to go with giant cat.
Really? You wouldn't want a little fluffy car?
Okay, and just to be consistent
the
with
in
the,
my house is the part
what Justin is saying here, the cat that you ride around in is smooth. Like, it's smooth like
chrome.
Because the car is fuzzy.
Yeah, the tiny car is fuzzy. The giant cat is smooth, and that shit's big, but outside.
Oh man. Anyways, this I'm excited.
Does it shit out the passengers, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's how you get out where you're going.
I'm excited that everything is changing in this issue, and we get kind of like a new but old status quo for our heroes. So I'm excited for the future, even though they're not in a good place, but at least they're together. And yeah, leave that fucking Pet City behind, man. Don't talk about Pet City.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited for the next issue because they're going to be doing a silent interlude issue. Like, you remember the G.I. Joe classic issue number 21 was the silent interlude issue. So they're using their issue 21 to do a silent interlude as well.
Very cool.
Even though dark things happening, they're doing fun, creative things in this book at the same time. Harley and Ivy, Life and Crimes, number 3 from DC Comics by Erica Henderson. In this issue, it finally happens. Harley and Ivy get together in a big way. I find this book just utterly charming, both from the art and the story perspective. There's a fun showdown with the Joker that's going on here, but it's just delightful from front to back. It's great. It's everything you'd want out of the definitive Harley-Ivy origin of the romance story. I think it's just nailing every single part.
The
art's fantastic. Yeah, there you go.
And the cover sets you up, and I was scared and nervous about it, but on the inside, it really delivers in such a great way. Yeah, you're kind of pulling for these characters and them to make the right decisions. So this was such a great issue. Amazing art. Fantastic story. This is great.
Each issue of this catches me off guard that we're dealing with the tied his face on Joker continuity.
Yeah.
And I'm like, right. And it's treated very normally in this issue, which I thought was funny. But man, the art is killer. The story is so, horrifying at points, but really sweet. The last page is so good in this issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great stuff. Strange Tales, number 4 from Marvel, written by Jeremy Whitley, art by Bailey Underwood and Corella Borelli. This is the final issue of this title that takes D&D, or rather role-playing tropes, and mixes them with Marvel characters. And man, this series was a blast. I know we've talked about every single issue, but it's just such a fun, weird mix of like Hulk running around in a Black Panther mask, Ghost Spider being almost a literal ghost, plus you got Nico Minoru, Wiccan, Scarlet Witch, tons of other characters in here. It's just characters that, like, talking about the crossover aspect that we were mentioning earlier, it's just characters that for the most part you'd be like, they don't make sense together, but
yeah,
it absolutely works as a fun role-playing game D&D style party, and I just thought it was a very fun series.
Yeah, agreed. This is fun. That's what's cool about Strange Tales is they can take some big swings.
You keep saying this. I'm sorry. You care about Strange Tales? You read Strange Tales back in the day?
Yeah.
All right.
There's a lot of first appearances of characters in Strange Tales historically. It's cool to see them kind of keeping this alive and doing...
We, not to cross-pollinate the streams, but we talked to Stan Sakai and a bunch of other folks for their upcoming Usagi Yojimbo Kaido 84 book. People should listen to that interview and listen to, I say this complimentarily, Pete geeking out. What he mentioned that he did a tale in Strange Tales. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I didn't even clock.
Yeah,
there.
Right. Yeah, no way.
Okay,
you
go
saw
ahead.
Your daddy Stan said something.
I just think,
like, I
as
Strange
comic
Tales.
Book fans, you gotta love Strange Tales. A lot of great ideas came out of Strange Tales. They try things in Strange Tales. I like
Stan
it.
Stan Sakai worked on Strange Tales.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Alex. I think this there's so many characters.
You're
in here.
You also agreeing with me.
In a way, I am.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah.
But the point specifically of these characters are not natural fits in the Marvel Universe, but they fit together very well in this book. It's written with such ease, I feel like, which is hard for something that feels like you're moving a lot of pieces together. There's a great exchange in the middle of the fight where Nico's talking to Scarlet Witch. Who's that woman with Hela? That's her wife, Carnilla, the Norn Queen. Hela's a wife? That's kind of cool. I didn't know Hela was. Focus, Nico. We can research the gay marriage of the Queen of the Dead later.
Yeah.
Which I was like, good, like, well done joke.
Yeah, funny.
To put it in
fun.
There. Really fun. And that tone and spirit is all through this book, and so it's nice.
G.I. Joe, number 18, from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art
Come
by
on.
Marco Fodera. In this issue, we're getting a standalone story focusing on Roadblock,
yes!
who runs a food truck, and Tomax and Zamot want to recruit him to be the face of their evil organization. Pete, I have to imagine you're shouting for food trucks, the only place you eat.
Pete likes food and trucks. No. As we Pete, do you want?
No.
What if you had a tiny ham car that you rode around in, or a truck that drove into your mouth? Just kidding. This comic, I can't believe you didn't shout this out in the stack of something you're looking forward to, because this comic is the most Pete coded of anything we've talked about this week.
Yeah, this is an unbelievable. First off, fantastic cover. But this is an homage to the famous episode of G.I. Joe with the Red Rocket chain, where Roadhouse has a burger joint and Cobra tries to buy him out. So this, like, I was just geeking out because this was, like, such a shout-out to that episode of G.I. Joe. And the fact that they're kind of having similar things, and then they're thinking maybe, like, Shipwreck. But man,
wait, are you not, aren't you talking about the famous episode of G.I. Joe where Snowjob tries to sell ice to Eskimos?
No,
or
no.
the one where Traffic Cone tries to sell the Chicago Bulls to Cobra. Is
Dude,
that the one you're talking about?
No, this was such a kind of cool, fun take. And I was just so happy. It was like my childhood is already being rewarded because of this comic. But then the fact that they called out that specific episode, and I was like, I remember that episode. This was so great. But yeah, you know, just Roadblock is one of my favorite shows. So cool to kind of see him here doing his thing. And, you know, he loves the cheese. You know what I mean?
Another tie for Pete's favorite Joe, all of them at number one, equally the fave. The thing about this, like, it's good. I feel like they're really leaning in the nostalgia. This comic, the coloring has like a sepia tone.
Yeah.
This is the most nostalgia baiting issue on the stands of the week. And it's, let me say, it definitely worked. It's someone who didn't have the nostalgia, who didn't see the episode where NFL Super Pro, who I think was a G.I. Joe, Pete, back me up. I think I'm right there.
Yeah,
he became the quarterback until Cobra threw an interception and lost the big game for him.
Pete?
I don't know what's going on, but I do think that, like, this was just really a blast. Not only the color of it, like you said, but just also the story. And we're building to something that's very interesting. And there's a lot of fun that when I think of G.I. Joe, there's always Destro and Cobra Commander fighting over the throne. And we got this in this issue as well. So it's nostalgic on a lot of levels. But I see what you were doing there just when the Bills came. I just realized it.
Absolute Martian Manhunter, number 8, from DC Comics, written by Dennis Kemp, art by Javier Rodriguez. In this issue, as with every issue of this book, the white Martian smoke is trying to take over the city. But here, John Jones wants a day off. He doesn't want the Martian around anymore. So the green Martian heads off to go investigate some stuff and investigate humanity. While John Jones reconnects with his wife and gets wasted. Maybe not in that order.
Yeah, this is crazy. The art is absolutely spectacular. It's worth it for the art alone. This comic and the level of art that they bring this to is just so goddamn impressive. But yeah, this is also heartbreaking because I'm pulling for the red Martian and he just leaves. And now, you know, this blue Martian's there and I don't know how I feel about it, but hopefully our guy will pull it together. But man, this is crazy shit going on here.
Yeah, this issue in particular had the vibe of like a crossover between Department of Truth and a Hellblazer comic. I feel like Martian Manhunter has that Hellblazer energy where he's just like walking through the world and there's just crazy shit happening, visual and from a character perspective, all around him. And then we get into some larger ideas about America over the course of this issue as well, which I thought was a great addition here. And the art just continues to be a visual feast.
Yeah, that was the last thing you said was the thing that I wanted to, not the visual feast, but the thing before it that I wanted to focus on that I was really struck with.
So
this
second
issue. Second to last thing. It's always been running under the hood here and sometimes very blatantly so, but starting off with scenes of the white Martian coercing people to report on their neighbors feels incredibly present right now. And it's something that Dennis Capp has been playing with more explicitly over in Image Comics and Assorted Crisis Events. He's also been hitting it pretty hard over in the Ultimates, but that started to seep over into Absolute Martian Manhunter as well. Again, it's always been present there. That's always been sort of, I think, the underlying idea, but really just opening with that and hitting that over and over again in this issue makes it feel like the fear, the uncorrect fear that people feel over immigrants in America, those anxieties are coming out through this issue. And that's good. You know, art should be reflecting those things and diving into those things. It is not presented as something good. It's not presented as something right. In fact, it's very much wrong. And people should know that. People reading art should know that.
Well, and it's such a natural fit in the DC universe right now. The KO event is like, what if there is a dark energy influencing the world? And I'm like, I hear you, guys. And that feels like this comic, a lot of the issues in DC KO are explicitly not trying to make big draws to our real world, but this comic is, and I think it's such a natural choice.
Yeah, this is basically like, what if there was an influence that was forcing you to report on your neighbors that the police department was not on your side?
Yeah.
But also beautiful art throughout the book. Next up, The Author Immortal, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Frank J. Barbiere, art by Morgan Beam. Lots of stuff going on in this issue as young Althea is exploring a section from the fantasy book that she is trapped in. Their dad is teaming up with the older version of Althea, who is a warrior, and they encounter some weird stuff as well. Meanwhile, back at the real world, some things are changing with the book outside of the book. And if you don't know what I'm talking about at all, basically, there's this guy who was hired to revamp his favorite childhood books. He and his kid have gotten sucked into that fantasy world, leaving a bunch of folks behind, and there's some dastardly forces that are manipulating them. This issue in particular is the one that felt the most like The Unwritten to me. I think when we talked to Frank, he shouted that out. We talked about it, but like this one, I was like, oh yeah, this is 100% is that. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, it's a good thing. Like it's like stories.
No, it's a good thing. Yeah.
Stories about stories and being from different ink. Like all of this, like the language and different metaphors that are at play here are really well done. I think the art in here is excellent. One thing I wanted to highlight is the author is talking to Althea, and he's talking about pronoun usage. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's just so hard to do it. And Althea's like, no, it's not. People should be able to, like, I thought it was just, people should be able to be defined. What's so hard about it? Like, talking to someone, how they want to be defined, letting them choose how they want to be defined. And I thought it was one of the, just a great scene and such a cogent, like, yes, exactly. Just a perfect crystallization of that. That whole like argument that a lot of people who don't want to give people the correct pronouns that they want to be called by, like, it was one of the most well done versions of that I've seen.
Yeah, amazing art style. I love the kind of watercolor look that this has. It's really cool. Amazing last panel, which was really crazy. You get a little bit of everything in here, which is great. A little budding romance, and then Mom shutting it down. So yeah, just really cool, very trippy, very scary, but also really great, impressive artistic choices here.
Well, and I also want to say there's the backup in this. Like, it feels like it is just like a throw-in side story, but I actually think this is where we're learning a lot about the mythology of this world, and that's really cool.
The Flash, number 29 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid and Christopher Cantwell, art by Vasco Georgiev. This is another DC KO tie-in. Here, Bart Allen has kind of messed up time, so maybe Barry is never going to become the Flash, which means nobody else becomes the Flash. And Wally is trying to restart that while the Dark Legion is on his tail. I know I'm a Flash fan, but I'm curious to hear what you guys think about this arc so far.
Yeah, great art. Go ahead. Yeah, great art, cool stuff. We get the, who's going to make the sacrifice here for the team. But, really cool splash pages. This is, Mark Waid knows what he's doing here and kind of spinning some interesting tales.
Leave it to Mark Waid to take Impulse, a character that he wrote way back in the day, and making him the main character for this part of the Flash continuity. Through DCKO, he's the character most sort of the opposite of an Omega-infused character. Do you remember that first Impulse book? It was like, almost a comedy book via a new Flash. And so to see that here is really cool. I think the art is mirroring a lot of the art from that original Impulse series, which is really great as well. And a welcome point of view in the Flash main book, I think.
Wrestle Heist, number 2 from Image Comics by Kyle Starks, is following a bunch of over-the-hill wrestlers who are, per the title, putting together a heist to get revenge on the booker, manager, wrestling.
Corrupt booker is what it is.
Sure, yeah. Corrupt booker who ruined their lives. And this is very much a getting the team together issue as they go and try to recruit various other people. Pete, you were hyped for this one through the roof on the live show. Why is that?
Yeah, this is really awesome. First off, love the art. The vibe to it is really great. And they're, you don't have to say they're over the hill. They're just, they used to wrestle. Now that, they don't anymore. They're, just a little bit older. You don't have to be a dick about it.
They're in their prime.
This is just such
a prime.
Cool idea. I love how everything is just kind of clicking in this place in the second issue here, where we really kind of get the plan and see like this douchey promoter's just awful. We really kind of get to see it instead of one person talking about it. So like, we're really pulling for this ragtag team to right some wrongs here, and hopefully this all goes down. So yeah, this issue really kind of just ramps things up, clicks into place. Just so excited for this. I felt like the first issue was cool, but man, the second issue really hits on a different level, and I'm all about it. I'm so excited to see what's going to happen if they pull off this heist. I'm rooting for them.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to go absolutely fine. I agree, like with Pete, this is a fun comic, but I want to shout out the back matter, and we did talk to Kyle Starks about this a little bit. It's such a great addition to this, and it deepens so much of what we're doing in the main story by reading the absolute passion that he has, other creators have and the depth at which he has thought out every aspect of this book.
Yeah, just to mention some of it, beyond little interviews and snippets with creators about wrestling, you've also got these fake ads that he told us when we were interviewing him. The ads progress the story of the ads over the course of the issues, which is so funny. It's such a great package, to use Pete's term.
Tight package.
It's a very loose package with a lot of things going on in it, but it's a great comic. Pick it up. And last but not least, Justice League Unlimited number 15 from DC Comics, written by, once again, Mark Waid, art by Dan Mora and Sean Isaacs. You're not going to believe it. Another DC KO tie-in. Here, Mr. Terrific is leading a team of time-lost heroes into hell to try to convince Neron to stop doing his Underworld Unleashed thing, or whatever that crossover was called, where he powered up, juiced up all the bad guys.
Juiced him. He's
doing it again. Mr. Terrific would love him to stop.
Well, he's like, give me some juice. Yeah. He's ready to take some juice.
He is. The juice is loose, as we like to say. Pete, were you about to say that? Did I take that away from you?
Did you take the juice right out of your juice hole?
Cool cover, art is sick, really great action, fun twists and turns. This is enjoyable.
There's so much going on in this book. There's so much going on in this crossover, to the point where I, like, the first few pages in, I was like, oh, right, all these characters. We have Airwave, which definitely the award for character that is the most loved by Mark Waid, I feel like, in modern DC continuity is Airwave. I was like, right, Airwave, blah, 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 happening. And I was like, yes. So also, you have all these, like, team of misfit dimensional characters in hell wandering through. I love this storyline. Every time one of them goes, it's such a bummer. But it's great. It plays a little bit like a horror comic. Mark Waid uses the space so well in any comic, and there's a sort of devil's gambit that happens at the end with Mr. Terrific, and a fun reveal at the end. Just lots going on, a lot of it very good in the DC KO crossover.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube.
Sure do.
Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com, for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Pete, what if it was a giant cat that you rode in, and then you had to go to a station and fill it with wet cat food that came out of a hose into its mouth?
Oh, that seems fun.
And then when you got there, you pooped out of a cat's butt, which everyone knows is a very public thing.
Wasn't that an episode of G.I. Joe? Am I getting that wrong, Pete?
Yeah, it's definitely not.
Cat Fancy was the name of the Joe, I believe.
Oh, boy.
The new year is the perfect moment to set your family up for success, including finding a school that finally fits the way your child learns. Introducing K-12 powered schools, tuition-free, accredited online public schools for grades K through 12. With K-12, students move at their own pace, with state-certified teachers who bring lessons to life through interactive hands-on technology. If your child needs a school that adapts to them, K-12 can help unlock their full potential. Learn more at k12.com/podcast.